Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen, listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Power Slams. We are once again here live on a Tuesday night, giving you what you want to hear, letting you know the best of Tuesday night wrestling talk. We are here. We are live once again. We have so much fun in store. And of course, as always, I'm here with the Pancakes and Power Slams co-host, Derek.
Yes, I'm here. Of course I'm here. This is Tuesday night. You want to talk about wrestling? That's what we do. That's what Chris Featherstone and I do. Pancakes and Power Slams, the new Tuesday Night Titans. This is where you want to be to hear best wrestling news, commentary, whatever you feel like talking about. It's wrestling related. We're going to talk about it whether you like it or not. Call in 347-884-8452. Let's get the show started.
Absolutely. 347-884-8452 is the number to call. And we have so much material to talk about today. Of course, we have Raw, which was filled with a lot of different things. And, of course, we have the elimination. We have the Money in the Bank coming up. We have the match, the championship match. And we also have the Money in the Bank ladder match. And, of course, we have our predictions, and we are at episode 117 and counting. Money in the Bank, we're going to talk about that in our prediction, in our predictions part of the show, of course, as we do every pay-per-view. And our flavor of the week this week, we're going to talk about alumni of the American Wrestling Association, the Ganyas. Stomping grounds, the Ganya's bread and butter back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so there are 10 names that we're going to talk about. Hopefully we have enough time to cover them all this week. We got so much going on that if we don't cover them all this week, we'll definitely finish up next week. But we have 10 names that we're going to talk about. Actually, 11 names. I paired one of them together. Actually 12 names. I paired two of them together. But we're going to talk about them. And these people came out of the AWA. They're alumni. They either established names and had and found their biggest form of achievement in the AWA, or they started in the AWA and became popular because of their stint in the AWA. And, of course, we have a ton of wrestling trivia. So go into the chat room. We got the chat room loading up already, which is amazing. Episode 117, we're going to continue to have some fun here on the Pancakes and Power Slam show. Let's start off with a trivia question. As always, of course, tweet at Crave Wrestling. first trivia question of the night is, what was the Tom Zink and Rick Martel tag team name? What was the Tom Zink and Rick Martel tag team name? Chat room, you better hurry up and say something before Derek does. Although he, every week he has no permission to say the answers, but somehow he still kind of slips it out, quote unquote slips it out. And he totally does it on purpose.
Yeah, not this week.
Okay.
I've got
all right. Well. All right, you got to respect the chat room. And so, hashtag respect the chat room. And but here's the thing: I'm holding the chat room accountable, because if the chat room does not answer it in time, if they do not answer it in time, Derek has free reins to go ahead and answer it. So we definitely are going to have some fun. So we'll see where that goes. All right, so of course, once again, what was the Tom Zink and Rick Martel tag team name called? Real quick, I do want to announce that Bad News Barrett was injured at SmackDown tapings. He had a separated shoulder, so this is a very, very unfortunate time, because Bad News Barrett was, I mean, this was undoubtedly his best gimmick, without question, this is his best gimmick that he's had in the WWE, and he was getting way over and starting to get very popular. And so, that's just really the risk to take in the world of professional wrestling. It really sucks, because you have your moment, you're reaching your zenith, and you get injured. Same thing happened with Daniel Bryan, and that's what's going on with Bad News Barrett. And hopefully, it's just a really small separation that does not have to require any type of surgery or anything, because that would be very, very sad if that's the case. So let's wish for the best, and hopefully it'll be much better than we think. All right, let's go on to Raw, and yes, absolutely. Great job, chat room. Can-Am Connection. The Can-Am Connection was Tom Zink and Rick Martel. They didn't have a very long tenure, because Zink ended up getting injured, I think it was, or something to that nature. And, of course, he was replaced by Tito Santana, and they became Strike Force. And one of Derek's favorite theme songs, Girls in Cars. Which is a very, yeah.
Love that song. That is an awesome. I wanted to include that last week with our favorite entrances theme songs.
Yeah.
Didn't
have
time. No. 90 minutes is never enough time for what we have to cover here on Pancakes and Power Slam.
Absolutely. Girls in Cars. All right, let's start off with the Raw. We have Seth McMahon calling out Vicky Guerrero. I think it was, to me, it was quite evident that this was revolving, the night was revolving around Vicky Guerrero's send-off. I think I mentioned before, or at least I mentioned via Twitter, and we report on wrestling.com as well, that Vicky Guerrero, she was going to stay until WrestleMania, but she stayed longer. She's endeavoring on a career in college, and just really really taking a different turn in her career. And she's been with the WWE for almost 10 years, and she was just ready for a change. And I'd give mad respect to her for endeavoring in a college career. I mean, she's not an old person, but she's approaching, I mean, she's getting up there in age, and for someone and her age and with all of the experience that she's acquired in the WWE, and I'm sure that she's making good money, with someone, even with that, deciding to engage in a college career, I give mad respect to her. So, you know, there was a lot of reports going around throughout the years that because of the Eddie Guerrero passing, Vicky Guerrero was promised a spot in the WWE for life. You know, of course, unless she did not want it. So that's the reason why, you know, no matter what, we still see Vicky Guerrero throughout the years, and they found many, many different angles to put her in, and she was undoubtedly, in my opinion, I don't think it was anything, I don't think no one can dispute this, she was the biggest heel in the past 10 years in the WWE, without question. There's nobody in the past 10 years that has garnered as much heat in one setting as Vicky Guerrero does. She comes out and says, excuse me, there's been a couple times where I've seen her live, and I literally could not hear myself, and especially anyone who's talking near me. That's how much heat she would garner in one setting. And to me, that's amazing. I mean, that's what pro wrestling is all about. You have to garner face pops or heat. If no one's cheering or jeering you, there's a really good chance that you're not doing what you need to be doing. So basically, Raw starts off with Steph and Vic, and Vic, they go back and forth, and she brings up Eddie Guerrero. Actually, Stephanie brings up Eddie Guerrero's name, which is a little touchy. But they did it with class, because Stephanie did say that he may deserve those cheers, but you don't. So they tuned it well, and basically at the end of the conversation, if Vicky beat Stephanie in a match, she was able to keep her job. If not, she'd be fired. Next, we have Luke Harper defeating Jimmy Uso, and then Jey Uso calling out Eric Rowan, who was already at ringside for a match, and then Jey ended up beating Eric Rowan. I'm okay with this exchange. You know, it was 1-1, and you gotta make the Wyatt family look like a legitimate threat to become champions. I think that them being in the Wyatt family, period, is a legitimate threat to become tag team champions. But one thing that I want to talk about specifically is that crazy off the wall theme song, the harmonica funeral version of "He's Got the Whole World in His Hands." When they came out to that theme song, I was just totally shaking my head vigorously from left to right, just in awe and frustration and just shock that the WWE, I can understand the reasoning behind it, but that music is so horrible that it was really, really hard for me to just endure the couple minutes that I had to take with listening to that song. It was a horrible song, and the bad news is that we're probably going to be hearing that every week.
Yeah, you'll probably hear it every week. It's kind of a new twist. I think everyone kind of got tired of, you know, I don't know. I like their theme song. I really did get into the theme song, the Wyatt family, so I can't really argue that. Yeah, it wasn't my favorite. I had to listen to it a couple times over before I really understood what it was. But, you know, they got to do something. There's nothing else for them to do, so they got to switch something up. They got to change it. Is it for the better? Probably not. I don't really see much of that going on as far as little things like that to bring the Wyatts to all of a sudden, hey, they're great, wonderful. No. It was awkward. I didn't hate it, but it was there. So I just kind of took it as it was. Said, yeah, that's the Wyatts again. put my feet up on the sofa and just watch, because that's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do. Next trivia question is, who won the 1994 Battle Royal? Who won the 1994 Royal Rumble? Excuse me. Who won the 1994 Royal Rumble? Next, we have Naomi defeating Alicia Fox. I like Naomi a lot. And one thing I like as well is I like the fact that they're teasing a Cameron heel turn. I also like that as well. And I do like the Naomi and Paige feud, two faces, you know, stunning, and just the ability to wrestle. You know, we actually have two good wrestlers that is going to have a match at Money in the Bank. And at the end of the day, you know, Naomi was their go-to, the next go-to person. Paige just came in the scene from NXT as kind of a rush type thing. Good job, chat room. Lex Luger and Bret Hart. Chat room is on fire so far today. Good job. But I definitely think that at the end of the day, Naomi was the one who was pinned to be the next star, and I'm totally okay with that. As far as looks, the ability, the athleticism, she's actually one of the better wrestlers in the Divas division right now, and she doesn't have, like, the thing is, people are upset that Natalya doesn't get any love, and I'm one of those people. I think Natalya is phenomenal as a wrestler, but we have to be honest here. When it comes to being a top diva, you got to have a distinct look too. Paige is as pale can get, and she's British, so, and she's different. She's like a spunky, pale, but somehow she fits that into attractiveness, and so that works for her. That's her niche. You know, she screams, she's spunky, it works. With Natalya, not so much. I mean, she's really good in the ring, but there's nothing charismatic as far as the look. I agree with the chat room, actually, for the comment. But the thing is, the look with Natalya is just not there. I mean, she has the athleticism. She's amazing in the ring. But that's really about it. And Naomi, she has a very distinct look as well, very athletic, former cheerleader, so she has the look as well as far as being a top diva. So I like the fact that they're doing Paige versus Natalya, Paige versus Naomi, and Naomi was the go-to person, but of course she got her eye injured by Oksana, and then that caused her to, that caused it to be delayed. And so Paige came in, and right person, you know, right place, right time, and she became champ. And I'm okay with it, and I definitely am okay with a Paige and Naomi match. And it should be pretty good. I would imagine that this match has the potential, halfway throughout the year, I would say that this match has the potential to be the best Divas match on WWE TV this entire year. As far as the network is concerned, Natalya versus Charlotte blew everything and everybody out the water on NXT TakeOver about a month ago. But as far as WWE programs, WWE TV, I definitely think that Paige versus Naomi has all the tools to become the best Divas match of the year.
They have to harness on Paige. She makes everything interesting. She's gorgeous. She actually has athletic ability. That's what I love most about her. Her and Naomi could tear the house down. The Divas division, I've always been someone that just never really cared for the Divas division. I really see an upturn, and that's great. And I think a lot of
coming around.
Everybody has been putting their game up to compete with Paige, I think. Alicia Fox, all that stuff's annoying with her pettiness and rubbish. However, she can carry a good match. She's okay. Naomi's they're all, it takes Paige. It takes one to make the rest of them follow suit. And I think that's what's going on in the Divas division. And it's going to be in an upturn. If it turns into a travesty, then Paige was probably traded. So.
Yeah. I'm excited about this, actually. I don't get very excited with Divas matches. But I will say that this is one of the better Divas matches that I'm pretty excited about. It should be pretty good. Next, we have Bo Dallas defeating Titus O'Neil. What in the world are they doing with Titus O'Neil? I mean, this guy has all the potential. He's almost 40 years old. That's even more of a problem. He's getting up there in age. So he doesn't have really a second win. He doesn't have much shelf life left as far as WWE is concerned. And so they made him a heel, and has done absolutely nothing to propel his career. It's really saddening and sickening. There's no way in the world that Titus O'Neil should not be involved in a mid-card feud right now, and a real good mid-card feud. Titus O'Neil and Sheamus, they had a couple matches on SmackDown before. They just was beating the snot out of each other, and it worked. But for some odd reason, they are deciding to just make Titus O'Neil a jobber. They don't have anything for him, and it's not working. Last week, of course, I went to the SmackDown tapings, and as you saw on SmackDown, he got embarrassed by Adam Rose. It was a roll-up, and he said he wasn't ready, and he got rolled up again, so he lost twice in one night to the same person within 5 minutes, and it was really, really sad. And I just don't understand what they're doing with Titus O'Neil. Bo Dallas, on the other hand, he's getting catchy. I'm still not sold on his gimmick. I'm still not sold on his character. His mannerisms are catchy. I will say that. However, I'm just not sold on him being a main event guy. I mean, and at the end of the day, what's the purpose of him being there and winning all these matches if he's not going to be a main event guy? And what's even more sad about that is he's supposed to come and get this push. He's not even in a Money in the Bank match, and we'll talk about that Money in the Bank match after Triple H announced it. We'll talk a little bit more about that as far as the participants. Oh, boy, I've got some things to say about that. But as far as Titus O'Neil is concerned, what in the world are they doing with this guy?
Titus O'Neil is almost – I could see him being the new Kofi Kingston. And I just say that for the fact that he'll start jobbing everybody for no particular reason. He's got talent, but they're just going to trash him just to trash somebody. Bo Dallas, I disagree. I think he's more annoying than anything. I don't get behind him at all. I don't think a lot of people do. He's kind of a lame duck, and I don't see him being much more than what he is now. If they push him that way, well, then, of course, that's just WWE doing what they do. But about Bo Dallas, I mean, that was a horrible match last night. The top rope bulldog, Titus O'Neil's out flat. There's no way. I just don't see that being real wrestling. That's just WWE pulling wool over our eyes.
Yeah, if it was anything real about that match, Bo Dallas would get humiliated, absolutely humiliated. I don't know what they're going to do with Bo Dallas, but I'll give you my take on how I feel about Bo Dallas or how I feel about the Money in the Bank right now, because Triple H announced the remaining Money in the Bank participants, which are, other than Seth Rollins, of course, we have Kofi Kingston, Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, RVD, and Bad News Barrett, and of course later Dean Ambrose. We'll get to that in a minute. But you're kidding. You're coming to tell me that Kofi Kingston and Jack Swagger are credible Money in the Bank participants? I was talking to a coworker today, and I was, you know, we, of course, you know, talking wrestling, and I mentioned, you know, Kofi Kingston hasn't won a match since 1980. He wasn't even born in 1980, and Jack Swagger hasn't even won a match since 89, and he was a kid in 89. So, I mean, these guys, they have not earned a spot. I know that you want a spot monkey. You already have that with RVD and Seth Rollins. I understand that you want your big, you know, spots. You want your high spots. You got Kofi Kingston in there. But at least have the guy win a few matches before he could become. You just throwing people in the Money in the Bank. Losers like Kofi Kingston and Jack Swagger. It's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing that you would put someone like Kofi Kingston and Jack Swagger when you have people like Big E, when you have people like Rusev, when you have people like Bo Dallas, who are credible contenders right now, who actually win matches, that they can be in the Money to Make. I understand that you're trying to do a Big E and Rusev feud. I get it. The Big E and Rusev feud is going to lead to nowhere because although I'm a huge fan of Big E, they've booked him horribly since he won the Intercontinental title and lost it. They've booked him horribly. So a Big E and Rusev feud, I understand the point, but it's not really going to propel Rusev much because Big E is not the guy who you should feud with to propel Rusev. So have the match, you know, you already have the match between Big E and Rusev at a pay-per-view. Okay, that's it. You already have the match. So why not put them both in Money in the Bank, and it would make much more sense, just like what you're doing with the Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins feud. It would make sense to have Rusev and Big E instead of Kofi and Swagger. It makes absolutely no sense at all. It was just a poor, very poor decision to put Kofi Kingston and Jack Swagger in the Money in the Bank. I was very interested in the Money in the Bank, the traditional Money in the Bank match, but now my interest has decreased tremendously.
Kofi and Swagger Money in the Bank is a spit in the face to just about anyone else in that locker room. There's no reason for them. Kofi Kingston hasn't done squat in 2 or 3 years. Jack Swagger does not do anything. He's got a mouthpiece in Zeb Coulter, and even he's getting boring. And there's just nothing Swagger. There's just nothing. It makes no sense. I'm just as shocked, and there's so many people that deserve to be in there. More than those two. So why is WWE toying with this like this? Everybody knows it. Now no one's going, Kofi Kingston, he's a good qualifier to win Money in the Bank. No, he's not. Neither is Swagger, even half the people that are in there. Absolutely disgusting.
Not at all. Not at all. Absolutely not. I totally agree with you. It just makes absolutely no sense that, I mean, what happened to the days of actually qualifying for the match, and that just goes to show the real poor, lackadaisical, lousy booking. Why not have a Raw instead of a Bo Dallas and Titus O'Neil match, or a Jack Swagger and Kofi Kingston match, or a Big E and Honest Abe match? Why don't you actually have qualifying matches? Or here's the thing. Or you could have even had those matches be qualifiers. Had Bo Dallas win, have Big E win, and have Swagger or Kofi win, but either of them would have been still bad, you know, to be qualifiers, but at least have one of them win and qualify to the, qualify a match. If Kofi Kingston wins one match, maybe he can have a case of being in the Money in the Bank match, but there's absolutely no case that he has to be in the Money in the Bank match. He loses so much that it's embarrassing, and it's somehow he still became a qualifier for the Money in the Bank match. It's just it's really poor. It's really lousy and poor booking. First of all, for you to even announce that, for you to announce and just throw names out there on a segment of Raw, to me that just makes absolutely no sense. It just didn't really seem like you. People earned it. They just got thrown into it. There wasn't any qualifiers. And just for the record, Kofi Kingston has lost his last 8 matches dating from Raw. The last match that Kofi Kingston won was May 12th of this year, and he beat Titus O'Neil. And before that, the last match Kofi Kingston won was April 21st of this year. So that means in 2 months' time, Kofi Kingston has won 2 matches, both of them against Titus O'Neil on a Superstars taping. Unbelievable. Hold on, there's more. There's more. So April 21st, right? So before April 21st, Kofi Kingston goes on a 7-match losing streak, including WrestleMania because he was in the Battle Royal. So he goes on a 7-match losing streak. And then before April 21st, mind you, that was the last match that he won. It was May 27th against it was May 12th against Titus O'Neil, so it's been a month and a half. And before that was April 21st, which was about 3 weeks before that match. And then a 7-match losing streak. So he was on a losing streak. Well, now he's on a losing streak. He hasn't won a match in 8, so this is his longest losing streak of the year. But a 7-match losing streak from April the 21st, and before that, the last match that he won, again, was Superstars. That's his favorite show. But he beat Damian Sandow February 24th of this year. So, and it's June 24th. So, in 4 months' time, Kofi Kingston has won 3 matches and lost about 20. That's, oh my goodness. I mean, I'm looking at the research right now. I'm looking at the numbers intern is giving me here. And, oh my goodness. I mean, that's just absolutely embarrassing. I can't even. And before the 24th, before February 24th, it gets worse. Before February 24th, he was on a 4-match losing streak, beat Damian Sandow on SmackDown. And, oh, wow. So the guy has won about 6 matches the entire year. He beat Orton on January 13th. That was the biggest match of his career when Orton was still champ. They just somehow, they had him beat Randy Orton, which was just some type of crazy surprise. But Kofi Kingston has won 7 matches the entire year. And this is, and it's over half the year. He's won 7 matches, Derek. He's won 7 matches. And he's lost about 25-ish matches that he's lost. It's been unbelievable. But ladies and gentlemen, we have a caller on the line. Let us know your name and your thoughts.
Hey guys, what's going on? It's Tech from Under the Mat Radio. How y'all doing?
Hey, good, Tech. Thanks for calling in.
No problem.
Let us know your Raw thoughts, man.
Well, I call it some of Raw. Got to get home late on Mondays, but Raw was okay. It is same old, same old. Good to see Kane. It's funny how they always have Kane, the big red monster. They always give him this big, like, scurry push, and then at the end of the day, we all know he's going to lose.
Yeah.
So, it's It's pretty good. You know, see Kane attacking on my show earlier. I'm all good friends with Chris. I'm not sure Chris is on enough. It's just you. But, you know, we just talked about the use of black wrestlers on the card. And I was just sitting here listening to your very thorough analysis on Kofi Kingston. And he basically took the place of John Morrison. John Morrison was that spot guy for the Rumble or the ladder matches or Shelton Benjamin. They just used to do all the great spots and all the handstands and then, you know, the flips, and they still lose. And that's where Kofi's at.
Yeah.
Kofi's just
there
to do spots and wow the crowd, and any day he's going to lose.
Yeah.
So,
indeed.
So also with these matches, I'm not sure if I'm jumping ahead. Have you talked about Money in the Bank yet, or you're just trying to stick on Raw?
Go for it. We want to do our Money in the Bank predictions at the end of the show. But yeah, let us know your Money in the Bank thoughts.
Well, Money in the Bank, excuse me, I'm just got to eat dinner. I apologize. Got Naomi against AJ. I'm sorry, AJ Page, which really was Paige Carter. No one knows. She's just a white girl that has a belt. It's like the punk rocker. That's it. So they're kind of pushing Naomi. But then you got Paige as the champ. So I believe Paige will still be the champ. Hopefully they continue this program and have to do like some kind of rematch at Battleground. Or what WWE always do, they make us air quote in the way we pay for the pay-per-view or monthly specials now. Then they just give us the same matches the next night for free. So we'll just have to see on that. The Usos, believe they're going to lose to the Wyatts. The Wyatts need some kind of momentum. They're like the biggest thing going on right now in WWE besides Daniel Bryan and Bad News Barrett. And the fact that the Wyatts continue to lose to Cena, and Cena always wins, they need something to kind of, you know, boost them and give them momentum. The ladder match for the title, that's kind of tricky. One thing's for sure, Kane, he's not going to win it. Sheamus is in it, he's not going to win it. Is Del Rio in that one?
Yes, Del Rio.
Yeah.
Del Rio, Orton, and Wyatt.
Well, Del Rio's not going to win it because he's pretty much in the doghouse. He hasn't been used like that in a while. So it goes the process of elimination to you got Roman Reigns, Orton, Cena, and Wyatt. So,
And Cesaro.
So hopefully, maybe Cesaro and Roman. I think it's too early for Roman to win the title. Maybe give it to Cesaro. Winning for sure. Please don't let it be Cena or Orton. We've seen them for the past 11 years with the title off and on, and it's nothing new at all. So, in the Money in the Bank match, I pretty much think Seth Rollins or Dean Ambrose are pretty much win the contract.
Awesome. Well, Tech, appreciate your thoughts. Everybody who's listening to Pancakes and Power Slams, why don't you go ahead and plug your show right quick, man?
Well, thanks, everybody. Like I said, Under the Mat Radio, we are live on Tuesdays from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. However, starting July 8th, we'll be having a new start time at our year anniversary of 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Coming up, we have Brodus Clay. We see the part of Kurt Hawkins coming up to the show. Next Tuesday, we have famed actor and WWE wrestler and micro wrestler, Shorty Sampson, will be joining us. If you're not sure who he is, he played many Kurt Angle, the Undertaker. He was just on Extreme Rules this year, many Jerry Lawler. We have Internet Sensation Chance Prophet joining the show coming up soon. We have Harley Race coming back onto our show. So we have, like, a lot of big guys. And authors coming up. So just check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Under the Mat Radio, Instagram, Under the Mat Radio, or you can email us at underthematradio@gmail.com. And like I said, I hope to plug your show, Friends with Chris, and I definitely put y'all out there. So thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks. Appreciate it, Tech. Absolutely. Again, check out Under the Mat Radio, 7 to 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Great guy. And he loves his wrestling. Seems like he was listening. He had to chime in when I was talking about the Kofi Kingston stats. Appreciate the interns giving me that information. So basically, the Kofi Kingston, basically, Derek, the Kofi Kingston stats of this year, the guy is 7-25 this year. But somehow he deserves to be in the Money in the Bank.
No, he doesn't, and you mentioned that, and it's just absolutely despicable. It's WWE just trying to throw their formula down our throats and tell us what we want to see. We don't want to see that. Who said that's okay to see Kofi Kingston and Money in the Bank? Your stats were dead on. I heard them all. Just disgrace. It's absolutely, you know, as a fan, I don't buy into it. As an intellectual fan, I don't buy into it. As an average fan, I wouldn't buy into it either. So let's just cut to the crap. And I want to see some real wrestling. I want to see a Money in the Bank. It's absolutely worth my money to pay for it. It's the way it is. That's
absolutely
how it should be.
Absolutely. I'm really just looking at these Kofi Kingston stats. I feel sorry for the guy. I mean, to win two matches in the past 4 months, let's make it even worse. To win three matches since February, let's say that. In the past 2 months, he's won two matches, but he's won four matches in the past 4 months. I stand corrected. The guy has won four matches since January the 28th. So that's 5 months. He won three out of four in January. Between the 13th and the 21st, he won three out of four. But he beat Damian Sandow on the 28th. And it was curtains from there. And he won three after the 28th. After he beat Damian Sandow on the 28th of January, he won three more matches the entire half year so far. So that's absolutely embarrassing. And there's no way in the world that someone like with that caliber deserves to be in the Money in the Bank. And really, to be honest with you, we'll get to Kofi Kingston a little bit more. When he goes against Jack Swagger, it's even worse. And I'll go more into that as far as what I tweeted during the show when we get to that. Next trivia question. Who was the on-screen president of WWE in the 1980s? Who was the on-screen president of WWE in the 1980s? Already. Great job, chat room. President Jack Tunney. I remember Jack Tunney when I was a kid, and man, that guy, what, talk about your stone-faced, you know, he reminded me of Lynn Thigpen when she was the, when
I'm
she
in San
was
Diego.
Like the, yes, exactly. But she was the, Whatever title she was then, I mean, I remember the kids were the gumshoes, and she was some type of, you know, super cadet or whatever she was. But, yeah, when Lynn Thigpen was on Carmen Sandiego, just real stoic and just real, you know, to the point and about her business, Jack Tunney was even more stoic than that. In the offices, great, yes, chat room. So that's why I love the pancakes and power slams. The warrant. Yes. Thank you, pancakes and power slams chat room, for understanding my affinity for Carmen Sandiego. Real quick, I think this is one of the first non-wrestling trivia questions that we'll have on pancakes and power slams. Trivia question is, what was the group that sang, great job, chat room, fantastic. Even before I finished, the chat room said Rockapella. Yes, this is incredibly exciting that we have. So obviously, basically, the more of the story is Carmen Sandiego and Rockapella is much more interesting than Kofi Kingston right now. That says it all. But let's go into Jack Swagger's. Let's go into Jack Swagger stats. Let's not just keep Kofi Kingston by himself. So Jack Swagger defeated Kofi Kingston. But before then, Jack Swagger was on a four-match losing streak, and the last match that he won was the ninth on Raw. He beat Santino, and before that, he won May the 19th. So the past 3 months, he's only won three matches. So, and before then, he was on a ten match losing streak actually. So he's beaten. As far as a losing streak is concerned, he's actually beaten Kofi Kingston. Now, he's won more matches because he's competed a little bit more. But he, as far as the span of time, he's won more matches total. But because he just beat Kofi Kingston, so he kind of beat him then. But the Jack Swagger's won three matches since May 19th, so that's a little bit over a month, so that's not too bad. But before May 19th, he went on a span of losing about 10 matches, and he beat Dolph Ziggler in a main episode of Main Event on August the 8th. So it was about a month and a half since then, and he would lose about three, win one, lose about four, win one. So that was pretty much Jack Swagger's record. He would lose about from January 27th to January 7th. He went on about a six match losing streak as well. Actually, eight matches losing streak. So, yeah. So Jack Swagger's, although he's won more matches this year than Kofi Kingston, his losing streaks are more embarrassing for sure. Real quick on the chat room says Swagger has the build and can hold his own. The WWE just doesn't utilize him. I agree. I think Jack Swagger. See, that's the thing. I think the WWE needs a new Kurt Angle. I think the one thing about the WWE, one thing that the WWE is missing is that really mat wrestling, charismatic, someone who's over. It doesn't matter if they're a face or a heel. Swagger tried to do it as a heel. He just isn't a natural heel enough for it to work for him. I actually think Big E can be the next Kurt Angle, honestly. It's a baby face, though. If they book him correctly, I think he can do it. When he came out to the American singlet and the American flag at Payback when he went against Rusev, it worked. I think it definitely worked, and I think they could have really done something with that. The problem with WWE is that they really don't spend time. And here's the thing. I guess I'm getting on my soapbox now. Here's the thing. We now have more hours, more weekly hours of WWE programming than we ever had in the history of WWE. We have 3 hours of Raw. We have 1 hour of Superstars. We have 1 hour of Main Event. We have 2 hours of SmackDown. So that's 7 hours a week of WWE programming, either on TV or the network. That's not even counting. That's not even including NXT, because that's another hour. So as far as WWE branded programming, that's 7 hours of WWE TV. So you're coming to tell me that you can't develop new superstars in 7 hours of television or 7 hours of network programming? That's absolutely ridiculous to me. You have Big E Langston win the Intercontinental Championship end of last year, and he was way over, and you book him so poorly that now he's hardly getting any reaction. They could make it work. They could revive Big E, but it just doesn't seem like within the 7 hours of WWE programming, they even care about really developing the mid-carders.
Well, they don't care about developing mid-carders. It's all based on Randy Orton, maybe not so much Batista anymore, but Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, Daniel Bryan's out of the picture, Bray Wyatt, John Cena.
John Cena.
same course, people.
In unison.
The same people it's been based on for months, the same people it's been based on, and the most part, for years. They've got nothing. Why do you keep hanging on? Why do you keep leeching on to these people? You need to let the next generation come in. These people, they had their time. They did, in my opinion, okay, mediocre with it. But the next generation of superstars, I mean, what do they have to show for anything in their mid-card status before they become the next big thing? Absolutely nothing. Nothing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Fantastic points. And here's the thing. I wrote an article on Bleacher, Wrestling Inc. This weekend. It was one of my favorite pieces of the year that I've written, because it was actually just months of just, I just could not hold anymore what I was just talking about on the show, what I was just talking about amongst peers, amongst fellow wrestling heads. I just couldn't take it anymore. I was so frustrated about this. I was frustrated about the potential of as far as the writing that the WWE has and the potential that they have with the people that they have right now. And I named the piece "The Power of the Slow Build." And basically, you know, one thing, and I've said this before, I do like the fact that they're really honing into building Roman Reigns. Seth Rollins, too, but Roman Reigns, really, and I like it. They're finally going back to a slow build for Roman Reigns, and I love it. Here's the thing. Back in 1997, 98, you're passing the baton. At that time, in 97, 98, the big guys were The Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart. Those were the big names in 1997. So basically, you had to pass the baton. Now, granted, The Undertaker, I mean, he ever since 90, he was, you know, there throughout the long haul, and he was just the mainstay. And he was such a staple for the company, but 97, he wasn't reaching his peak in 97. I mean, he was still very well. He was well in his prime, but he definitely wasn't reaching the pinnacle of his career in 1997. The very fact that Austin, here's the four: Austin, Triple H, Rock, Foley. Those four, 97, 98, those are the four people that WWE said, okay, with all of these people right now are mid-card talent, but we're going to pass the baton. We're going to pass the torch from Hogan and Warrior and Savage in the early 90s to Taker and Hart and Michaels in the mid-90s, going into the next generation, going to the next era, we're going to give it to four people, right? Really, Rock, Austin, and Triple H. But, of course, you throw Foley in there, too. And he was just as beneficial as everybody else was. And so, in my article, I looked at those four people, and I compared them to four people now who should be the next four, the next batch of the future of professional wrestling. Of course, you have your Daniel Bryan, which is akin to Steve Austin because of the what versus yes, and you have the anti-authority angle going on with both of them that really drew the money for both of them, made them stars because of feuding with an authority figure. Of course, you have Rock and Roman Reigns. I mean, they're cousins. So, I mean, that's very the comparisons are very obvious as far as they both have a look to them. They both have that Samoan style wrestling. They both have charisma, and so that is a pretty apparent comparison. And then you have Bray Wyatt and Mick Foley. You have that eccentric, you have that cultish character to Mick Foley when he was Mankind, And, of course, you have that with Bray Wyatt. And then you have Triple H, and I compare him to Cesaro. Triple H had a really egocentric, pompous character when he first started, and, of course, it became more, you know, aggressive and rugged when he became, you know, Triple H as opposed to Hunter House Hemsley. But when he first started, when he was in 97, 98, when he was Hunter House Hemsley with the curtsies and, you know, just the really elegant, you know, crumpets and tea type music, I compare him to Cesaro because Cesaro's more an aggressive guy, but he still has that pompous, egocentric style to him. So those are the four that are passing the baton to the new four. And my article says it best. I mean, it's time for the WWE to pass the baton. Let those four wrestlers be the future and stop being so scared and just putting the belt on Cena. And we'll get to the Money in the Bank predictions here soon. But they just have to pass the baton. WrestleMania 14, WrestleMania 15, that was the time. WrestleMania 16, that was the time to, well, more 14, 15. Those two WrestleManias were the baton passing, literally. I mean, you had, you know, Bret versus Austin. That was a very, you know, baton passing moment. That was very obvious. And of course, you have it was 16. You had or 14. You had Austin and Michaels. That was 14, right? That was the Iron Man match.
Austin and Michaels was 13
the year before, right?
What was the Iron Man match?
What was that?
WrestleMania 12 was the Iron Man match.
12, yes. 12 was the Iron Man match.
Between Michael Hart and Austin, and Ken Shamrock was the special guest referee. It was a First Blood match.
That was 13.
That was 13.
Right.
No Holds Barred match.
And Michaels,
submission.
And who did Michaels? Michaels was in the main event, right?
Michaels was injured. He didn't wrestle in 13.
That's right. He didn't wrestle in 13 because he was injured. That's right. So you had so that was a baton passing moment. When you had the Iron Man match at 12, and then 14 was Bret and Austin, another torch passing match, and so. Yeah, I mean that says it all right there as far as the new breed. So let's get to the rest of Raw right quick before we get to Money in the Bank. All right, so we had Rollins defeating RVD. That was going to happen, but it was because of a disqualification because of an Ambrose interference, which I'm cool with. I mean, it's getting to the point where RVD is just starting to lose way too many matches, and I just don't like it. He's just putting everybody over. This RVD run has been very lackluster. The last year run when he came at Money in the Bank, it was very surprising. It was very good. He had a really good match with Jericho and Raw, and just even his feud with Del Rio was okay. But this run is incredibly forgettable.
It's forgettable. And that's too bad, but I still say that RVD can hold his own. He can hold a match with anybody. There was a few episodes ago in Raw when I can't remember who he wrestled. There were so many botches there. I don't really blame RVD for it, but RVD, he's still somebody I get behind. He's energetic. I mean, he's still, nobody else can wrestle like RVD. Nobody else tries it or even does it. As far as what he does with his legs, I will always want to see RVD wrestle because, he can hold his own. He can do what he does, and it's been kind of lame just because, RVD's been around for years and years. Maybe this is his last hurrah, but I really think you pay attention to him because he can still run the show.
I sure hope so. I really, really sure hope so, because I mean, he's not doing anything now that's worth remembering at all. One of the higher moments of the show was Bad News Bear defeating Dolph Ziggler. Now that really encapsulated what a mid-card match should look like. That match was absolutely phenomenal. It was some really, really good close calls. The crowd was unglued with so many times throughout the match. That was such an amazing, amazing match, and we just really need to see more mid-card matches like that. And obviously Dolph Ziggler and Baron has what it takes to really put together a class A, grade A mid-card match for the Intercontinental title. We need to see way more matches like that.
It was great. I loved it. I even wrote in my notes here when I was watching last night, awesome match. You're right. The crowd came unglued, and they just started chanting everything. It was what a mid-card match should be, especially with the Intercontinental Championship. Again, a bullhammer wins the match. But man, that was so – it kept going back and forth, back and forth. You don't see that too often on Raw, but they just – I mean – that was the best match of the show. That was the highlight of the show. Monday Night Raw,
yeah.
6/23 will be remembered for the Barrett and Ziggler match, period.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very, very well said. Stephanie versus Vicky, we had Alicia Fox and Layla and Rosa Mendez. She pops up from Total Divas. They were Steph's goons, and they get thrown into mud, slop, goop, pool, whatever it was. And then eventually Steph throws Vicky in the pool, and then she sings na-na-na-na. Vicky's fired. And then Vicky gets her moment and throws Steph in the mud pool. I will give Steph some credit. She really sold that pool, that mud pool moment. And I think it was all because of really giving Vicky a good send-off. And I love that segment. As crazy as it looked, I saw way past that segment. To me, it was more of a send-off for Vicky Guerrero, and I think the very fact that they were spending time in more than one segment to have the opening segment be Vicky Guerrero, and then Vicky Guerrero getting a backstage interview that was interrupted by Randy Orton, and then you have the actual match, and then you have her coming out to Latino Heat, the Lychee Steel music, and Eddie Guerrero references. I mean, I really, really liked this send off of Vicky Guerrero, and love her or hate her, she's been so instrumental in the WWE for the past 9 years, and she deserved that type of send-off, and very well done for the WWE to do that for her.
I totally disagree. Vicky Guerrero, good riddance. I don't want to see her anymore, and it wasn't too much that the crowd that she created so much heat. They just didn't care. They did not want her there. She was annoying. She was so annoying that of course you couldn't hear him. Everyone wanted to talk over her. And you mentioned earlier why
that's
she was
heat,
in the
WWE. That's heat. That's the heat that needs to be generated. You get to the point where nobody cares, that's amazing heat.
No, that's a different kind of heat. There's heat where people want to see you get beaten up, and there's heat where people just don't like you.
That's true.
And that's what I always thought. True. Everyone felt for Vicky Guerrero. Nobody likes you. Just go away.
I think towards the end people were doing that, but I think it's the whole "we don't like you" type of heat. I think there's a distinction within that too, because you can have the heat which has been unfortunately coined X-Pac heat. There was a long stint in the WWE where X-Pac was in the WWE, and people just didn't care about the guy. That basically they didn't care, and they just wanted him to go away. Now with Vicky Guerrero, you know, of course she was annoying. People wanted her to go away, but she was so good in what she did. She generated so much heat, and to me, it was amazing. And there were many times that I remember I just wanted Vicky to go away, but they used her so well, and she was such a heat magnet that it really worked for the WWE. It was good. But, I mean, you know, you do make a good point as far as you disagreeing regarding her being wanted or anybody caring. But I do think that her generating that type of heat was very, very good for WWE TV. Next, we have Jack Swagger defeating Kofi Kingston. We talked about both of their records. Jack Swagger ends a losing streak, basically. They both had losing streaks, and Jack Swagger ended his. So that was quite sad. Big E defeating Damian the Honest Abe Sandow. Now, Damian Sandow, with all of these crazy gimmicks that he's doing, yes, that's giving him exposure, but that's making him look more like an idiot to me.
Yeah, absolute idiot. It was a squash match. I mean, there was no point to it. It wasn't even 2 minutes long. Absolutely, just another two-minute filler that they could have done something better with. Maybe bring out Bob Backlund and have him sell car insurance or something. Absolutely disgraceful.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with Raw. It had nothing to spark my interest. So forget about it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've talked about Kofi Kingston. We've talked about Jack Swagger winning less than 10 matches. I am grieved to say that Damian Sandow, since the beginning of the year, since January 1, Damian Sandow has won 3 matches the entire year. That is absolutely beyond sad. Absolutely beyond sad. 3 matches the entire year. We complain about, you know, we ran about Kofi Kingston and Jack Swagger not getting any love. Yikes. Talk about Damian Sandow. 3 matches the entire year. This guy needs to go to TNA or he needs to go to GFW and just become somebody relevant, because to win 3 matches the entire year is such an embarrassment for someone who won the Money in the Bank match last year. How about that? And then, of course, Lana distracts Big E while Rusev attacks him from behind, gets him in the Cobra Clutch or Accolade, whatever you want to call it. I just see another Rusev Big E match, which would just lead to Big E losing. They'll probably throw it on Money in the Bank just as a filler match. I think there's only like 5 matches scheduled for Money in the Bank right now. So I think that they'll probably throw that match in there for filler, and we'll see another Big E loss, unfortunately.
Another Big E loss, of course. And you got Rusev, they're trying to build him up. He wants some medal with a big star on it and say big whoop. But there's so much filler going on Raw. So much filler. And again, that they lean on the New Age veterans, which I wouldn't really consider any of them veterans, to carry the show, and it just kind of bores me. But, you know, throwing Big E Langston in there, that's great. They could do a lot more with Langston. He deserves a lot more, but they won't do it.
No, they won't, unfortunately. Hopefully they can just change their mind and make him. I really think that Big E can be the Kurt Angle of the new breed. I really, really think so. I think he has, I mean, the belly-to-belly suplex that he does is really, really crisp, and I just think he has a really, really good skill set. I think he has a really good skill set, a really good move set in the ring, and the preaching that he did in the ring yesterday, I think was absolutely hilarious. I think it probably embarrassed the heck out of him, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was very, very funny, and I just really hope that they give him the love that he had in NXT. The guy was way over NXT, and that's the whole three and enough, man, I need five. That came from the five count in NXT. And maybe not bring the five count back, but still do something with the guy. He's funny. He's hilarious. His Twitter is hilarious. He's a funny guy, and they just really need to do something with him. And, of course, the main event was the same outcome as SmackDown. The babyfaces won. Somehow four heels aren't good enough for Sheamus, Reigns, and Cena. So they won. It was the same exact main event for Raw and SmackDown, which is ridiculous. And the babyfaces won both times. This time, Kane comes out and just clears the ring, chokeslams everybody in sight. He becomes the eighth man to participate in the World Championship Money in the Bank match. But, of course, he didn't get much shine because he got speared, got cut in half, basically, by Roman Reigns, who had his last moment of proving to be a quality contender. I'm really, really high on Roman Reigns right now. They need to they need to take it real slow, though. They just really, really do. Don't give him the title. I think that he'll get the too much too soon treatment like Ryback did if they give him a title or something to that nature. They need to build him very slow, and they really need to develop his character, the mic work, everything about it. They need to take some time. And they appreciate the traditional art of the slow build. Don't give them too much too soon. And Kane being in the Money in the Bank match, I'm totally okay with it. I think he's a good addition. I think he's a credible addition to not the Money in the Bank, but the championship ladder match. I think he's a credible addition to it. And I even tweeted, real quick, with Kofi Kingston, I said I was going to say what I tweeted. I said, go away. I said, GFW. I said, TNA MVP stable, ROH, backyard wrestling, whatever. Just go. Because I was just so frustrated with that. But as far as Kane is concerned, I like him in the match. And I actually think that if he won the match, I wouldn't be opposed to that either. So, Kane as an addition is cool, and Roman Reigns continuing his build, I'm totally fine with that as well.
Hey, if Kane won the match, I would be the happiest person alive. Kane, pound for pound, I love Kane. I love to see him in the – I know he jobs just as much as anyone else. But that would be just something spectacular. It'd be totally out of the blue, out of the water. Kane wins. Are you kidding me? How happy would you be, Chris Featherstone, if Kane came out and totally dominated that match?
Wouldn't that be something?
It would be something awesome. But it's not going to happen. That's a fairy tale world. But again, that would be something beautiful. Raw ends on kind of an up note just because Kane came out and did what he did. So that was Monday Night Raw. What's next?
Indeed it was. Well, next we have just a little recap of SmackDown before we get to the predictions and the flavor of the week. I was there live, and I just want to say that, of course, the main events were the same. Sheamus signed autographs afterwards and wasn't a dark match. It was a great experience. Actually, I've attended all the live events for maybe one or two for the past 15 years, and this is one of the better SmackDowns. It was a lot of fun. And I love heckling. I love heckling out of floor seats. And one on the Let's Go Cena chants. It was a very heavy Cena crowd, which I was kind of interested about. But it was a Let's Go Cena, and I would say Bo Leave, and I started to get people around me on the floor chanting Bo Leave. In contrast to the Let's Go Cena chants, it was absolutely hilarious. I loved it. And another point real quick was the highlight of the night was Adam Rose coming out. All the Rosebuds, we were dancing. I started the Adam Rose dance around where I was sitting. And I was actually on TV twice. I looked on SmackDown and I was on TV twice. So fun times on SmackDown. And real quick for TNA, Bobby Lashley, congrats to Bobby Lashley. He defeats Eric Young to become the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion. All right, let's go to our Flavor of the Week before we get to the predictions. Real quick for chat room, the next question for the chat room is, other than Flying, what was Brian Pillman's nickname? Other than Flying, what was Brian Pillman's nickname? All right, we'll go to part one of our discussion of the AWA alumni. Now, like I told you before, either people who really kind of cemented themselves in AWA, who got their start in the AWA, or have become legends but had a noticeable stint in the AWA. We first want to start off with Nick Bockwinkel. Interestingly enough, this guy never had a notable wrestling career in WWE or WCW. I mean, he was like the commissioner of WCW for a while, but he never had a really big career there. But he still made it to the Hall of Fame in the WWE. So, kudos to Nick Bockwinkel for making it to the Hall of Fame.
Well, of course, Nick Bockwinkel is probably one of the best heels of all time, and Ric Flair got a lot of his stuff from him. Many of them did. And just because he didn't go to WWE or WCW afterwards doesn't really stand as how his character was. I mean, he was who he was. He believed in his character. The people that bought tickets to see him believed in his character. He was an absolute heel. He was a stepping stone to what heels can be, and he almost made the blueprint for it. Absolutely awesome heel. He couldn't be a babyface. He wouldn't know how, and he'd probably be horrible at it.
I think he had a small run in a babyface in the AWA, just to bring him right back to a heel, if I'm not mistaken, or more like a tweener type thing. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Bockwinkel was just a consummate heel, one of the best heels in pro wrestling history, without question. Interesting enough that he was an AWA mainstay, though. It just shocks me that he was such an AWA mainstay and never had a really prolific WWE or WCW or NWA career. It's really shocking to me. And be such one of the best heels of all time just to, you know, just stay in the AWA. Scott Hall is next before we go to the prediction. Scott Hall really honed his craft in the AWA. He was more like a big guy with a kind of a curly hair cut with like a handlebar mustache. He was just, he was a lot different than the slick-haired Scott Hall that we saw throughout the years. But, hey, he really honed his craft in the AWA and became popular.
Scott Hall will always be one of the absolute top number one stars just for his draw power. People got behind him. People loved his character, whether it be just Scott Hall, whether it be Razor Ramon, NWO. Scott Hall just knew how to make people stand on their feet and make notice of him. And, hey-yo. Who doesn't love that? Who doesn't love the bad guy? Who will ever forget Scott Hall? He came from the AWA. That's where he got his roots. Hats off to Vern Gagne for establishing that talent. And hats off to Scott Hall for making that talent work and making everybody just want to watch him, whether they loved him or not. They went to that wrestling show to see Scott Hall.
Indeed. And then we, real quick, we got two more. Stan Hansen, the Lariat, became a champ in AWA and had some issues with Gagne. And the big story from Stan Hansen's stint in the AWA is that he took his belt away, I believe, to Japan. And because, I mean, Stan Hansen's most success was clearly in Japan, but he was world champ in AWA, but he had some, I think it was either some contractual conflicts or just some type of conflict in general with the management there and Gagne and company. And he smashed the AWA championship. That's where a lot of stories confirm that, but I think Stan Hansen as champ was very appropriate in the AWA. He was definitely a top guy. He really didn't get to exploit his top guy status in the States, but he did get to do that in the AWA.
He did that in the AWA. More notably, he was with the WWWF and with Bruno Sammartino, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
They had a pretty big feud going. But his time with AWA, he did go to Japan. He was making a lot more money there. And I think Vern Gagne just brought him in to just kind of – that was when Vern, I think, was in trouble. When WWE was really up and coming, being huge with Hogan, Ultimate Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a last-ditch resort. But Stan Hansen, overall, AWA or not, his body of knowledge and just wrestling ability, just he came – he was in the AWA for a stint. But probably more notably with all the other promotions, even in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, one good minute of the Hennigs. I mean, the Hennigs, Larry the Axe Hennig and Kurt Hennig, especially Kurt Hennig, really, really honed his craft in the AWA, and the AWA really launched the Mr. Perfect character. You know, when he became AWA World Champ, he started to show more villainous ways and really starting to hone his mic work in. And just the Hennigs are two of the biggest names, without question. The Hennigs are two of the biggest names that ever was have been affiliated with the AWA.
With the AWA or WWE, wherever he was with, Kurt Hennig is probably, he's in my top 10. I think he's in a lot of people's top 10. He was just absolutely phenomenal. He was perfect.
pun intended. All right, real quick, let's get to the Money in the Bank predictions here. We have Layla versus Summer Rae, a singles match with Fandango as a special guest referee. It's been recently announced. I have no care about this match, but real quick, let's just whisk through these predictions. I've got Layla winning this.
Yeah, I do too. Summer Rae is going to screw it up somehow, but Layla's going to win. Fandango!
Paige and Naomi. I think that we'll see Naomi win on a different pay-per-view. I think Paige will retain it this time.
She has to retain, or else the Divas' division just goes 6 feet under.
Indeed. Traditional Money in Bank match. I believe that... Ooh, real quick. I'm gonna go safe and say Seth Rollins.
Yeah, that's a good safe, and I actually believe that's going to work.
Usos against the Wyatt family. I don't see the Wyatts winning. I think the Usos will retain.
I see the Wyatts winning. I don't think the Usos are going to make it this time.
All right, and the WWE World Heavyweight Championship match, I believe that Cena will be the victor.
Of course. Who else are they going to go to? They've got nobody else as far as they're concerned.
Indeed. All right, Crave Wrestling at Yahoo.com for any thoughts, any suggestions, any giving at PayPal. Crave Wrestling at Gmail.com. Crave Wrestling at Twitter, Facebook. And real quick, Kane has won 2 matches this year. How about that? How embarrassing is that? Unbelievable. All right, well... Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy Money in the Bank. It should be a really, really good pay-per-view. We'll be here Tuesday to talk about it. Until then, Daddy loves Elijah. Have a great week, and God bless. Goodbye.